And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to the 9 to noon show here in Highland Radio. It's great to have you on board, and we've got 3 hours, hopefully, to keep you informed and entertained. And the lines are open. I'm going to introduce our Friday panel to you shortly. I just want to invite you to be part of the conversation. 086 60 25000. That's the WhatsApp and the text number, 086 60 25000. If you prefer to call, it's 07491 25000. Our researcher and producer, Caroline, taking your calls, assisted by Katie today. And if you prefer to email, it's comments at highlandradio.com. And just to remind you, you can watch the programme. Go on to YouTube. If you have access to your Fire Stick or your Smart TV, you can watch us there. Or you can catch us on Facebook and on the X platform as well. Right, let's say good morning first to Katie Tyrrell McCafferty, community campaigner, regular contributor. Good morning, Kathy. How are you? Oh, Katie, I beg your pardon.
That's all right, Greg. Call me anything, as long as it's not late for me dinner.
Yeah, I prefer to call you by your actual name. That would be one of the benchmarks. But great to have you with us. All right, thanks so much. Solicitor Breed Corrin, hello. How are you?
Good morning.
Great to have you on the show. And Professor Pat O'Connor is a professor of sociology and social policy emeritus at University of Limerick. Hiya, Pat.
Hello, Greg. Good Relieved to be here.
Well, no, listen, say nothing and no one will know. Good to have you with us. I'll start with you, Breed. Just some emerging news yesterday and overnight. And following the verdict in the Belfast Crown Court, which acquitted the former British soldier known as Soldier F of all charges relating to the 1972 Bloody Sunday killings, the central question for many is, given the court's findings that the evidence against Soldier F did not meet the standard of proof for individual guilt, this despite the judge's statement that soldiers lost all sense of military discipline and shot unarmed civilians, what are the legal and political implications, do you think, for the remaining Troubles legacy cases in Northern Ireland, Breed?
It's very, very difficult. I just want to remark first on the quiet dignity of the people of Derry, the relatives. Remarkably stoic in all of this. But it's the old adage, isn't it? Justice delayed is justice denied. And certainly, you know, looking on from it from a non-legal point of view, you would think that, you know, it's blatantly unfair. That, I mean, Bloody Sunday, I was 2 in 1972, I'm now 55. And there's always an issue with historic prosecutions. And you're quite right. The evidence, unfortunately, was basically the witness testimony of two fellow soldiers, G and H. And Judge Lynch found that they were serially untruthful. And it would have been unsafe to convict Soldier F in those circumstances. And that's, unfortunately, the legacy that is going to now have to carry into any future prosecutions or any future quest to try and get justice for people who are obviously grieving. And again, the dignity that they carry themselves with is remarkable. I think it's going to lay down the benchmark for any future prosecutions, unfortunately. And the fact that this is happening so long after the initial event leads me, unfortunately, to believe that justice, in the classic sense of the word, will be denied to an awful lot of the victims and their families, unfortunately.
It's very hard, obviously, you know, to be dispassionate with such a knowledge of what went on, what have you. But to try and step back from that a little bit, the bar has to be the same for everyone, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Beyond a reasonable doubt. And that's the problem. The burden of proof lay with the prosecution. They had to prove who pulled the trigger and shot William McKinney and James Ray. And they couldn't do that because the judge quite rightly said that the evidence, the only evidence, was that of G and H, who were lying, who perjured themselves. And it would be unsafe and manifestly unsafe to convict on the evidence that was before the court. And hard and all as that is, I was struck by the dignity that these people have. I don't know how they keep going. Absolutely amazing.
Pat O'Connor, your reaction to the verdict?
Well, I think I thoroughly agree with Breed. I think she has eloquently outlined the problem. And Really, it is justice delayed is justice denied. I listened to the, I think it is the brother of one of the victims, and like, he was so eloquent and so, like, he managed to extract from the situation a great deal of positivity, saying, you know what, that the judgment given, okay, it hadn't convicted Soldier F, but it had recognised that lies, untruths, all sorts of things had been part of the case. But it raises, I mean, very fundamental issues about, which are very topical today, about what citizens can do when power is abused.
Yeah, yeah, we might get on to that if I'm reading correctly. Katie, you know, I can't imagine what it must be like to spend your entire life trying to seek justice, you know what I mean, and to get as far as they did, and then to have the grace that they had as well, as both Breed and Pat have referenced. I mean, it is, there are so many people who have spent so much of their lives, every waking moment probably, seeking justice.
Yeah, Greg, and a lot of people, right, are not in my position that are English and completely understand the troubles, right? But I was very lucky, actually, because I studied the Troubles as part of my O-levels. And I remember when my mark came in and said, you try to give an unbiased opinion, but you do fall down on the Republican side of things, right? That obviously shaped my future quite well in the sense of understanding the situation. All I can say, again, the dignity of those families, I happen to know one of those families quite well. And I'm not surprised by the verdict, because, listen, everything was up against those families. I'm not surprised. It's not correct. We've seen miscarriages of justice go on for years in the state, in the UK, both unfair for those that were convicted of crimes wrongly as well. But those families could really teach some people a lesson about how you catch more flies with honey than you do with vinegar, because they're unbitter steadfastness has really caught the imagination of people, and this is how to tackle one of the most outrageous attacks by the British state on its citizens.
We'll be speaking to a relative of one of the victims a little later. Just finally, Breed, to you before I move on. I note that there's quite a lot of people in the Republic of Ireland publishing images and names of Soldier F, saying the gagging order doesn't apply in the Republic, etc. Have you any legal view in relation to that? Or
oh no, just this is my big issue at the moment with social media and, you know, the legal system is there, and I don't want to weaponize the legal system, and I don't want to come across as being somebody who's saying I know more than everybody else. I don't know more than everybody else, but what I do know is this: there are rules, there are laws. If we respect them, then we're respecting other people's rights, and we're acknowledging that we as citizens of a state have obligations. I would thoroughly reject any person who decides that they're going to go behind the blanket gagging order in relation to the identity of Soldier F. It's got no place in a modern society. The man has been found not guilty. The relatives have dealt with that in their own quiet, dignified way. Can we just stop now and let this go and let the rest of the trials continue on, and the rest of the work that has been done in that regard be done, without having this nonsense of, well, the rules down here are different than the rules up there. Let's just respect everybody's rights and acknowledge our obligations as citizens of the state.
Okay, that's the voice of Bree Curran. We also have Professor Pat O'Connor and, of course, Katie Tyrrell McCafferty. We'll be back with more from our panel after our first break. Now, we've seen three nights of protest at City West. Last night, smaller and peaceful. This in response to the alleged assault of a 10-year-old girl at the migrant hotel. A 26-year-old man remains in custody in relation to the incident. What lessons, I'll ask this of Pat O'Connor first, if that's okay. What lessons can be learned, I suppose, from the alleged assault and the handling of the protest? I suppose it's two parts. The second part must also include, did the Garda response get it right, Pat?
I mean, there's so many things there. But I suppose I'd want to start by saying I do think that in thinking about the protest, we need to really identify three constituencies. One are those who are really interested in fomenting hate and disruption. The second are ordinary citizens who are disquieted about the size of the centre and the loss of their facilities, such as the hotel. And the third group are what I, for want of a better word, seem to be being referred to as the teenage recreational rioters. Right? These are young people who really have nothing else to do, and it's a bit of crack, right? A bit of fun, I mean. And in a way, those three groups, lumping them all together as and saying that they are, you know, all the first group, those who are seriously interested in fomenting hate, does everyone a disservice. I suppose I'd want to say in the context of the recreational rioters that one of the things that has been really bugging me for ages is how way back, right, in the 80s and 90s, there used to be a whole load of facilities in disadvantaged and advantaged areas for basically youth, for boys and girls to do stuff which wasn't recreational rioting. And gradually that has virtually all disappeared, right? And nobody seems to really have recognised the consequences of that or have been interested in actually tackling it. So I think there are issues there. The second group, the concerned citizens who are upset about the loss of their facilities. I watched the news where, I watched Prime Time it was, where they interviewed the minister. And like, to be quite honest, there are issues surrounding how does government communicate with people in these situations. And but the minister's, it was Minister of State, his response was there's a web page. Now, I'm sorry, that doesn't cut it.
But does not the reason why many would feel, the reason why the government, and I think it really one of the first instances was up here in the Maville area, if I'm not mistaken, but one of the reasons why they don't engage, the government don't engage, is because the outcome would be that they would hear the views of people that don't want these types of facilities close to them, be it the loss of facilities or be it a perceived threat, particularly to women and children.
Well, I was very interested also to see an interview with the school principal in the area. And I don't know the man from Adam, but so I have no axe to grind. But he was exemplary. Like he said, you know, in their school, dialogue, compassion, communication. I mean, in a way you just thought, well, hello. Maybe some of our public representatives, like they are public representatives. So whether this is the role of the county council, the government or whoever, but somebody needs to actually engage.
Yeah, but you know, if it would not be politically advisable for anyone to step up at this point and try and mediate or to advocate on behalf of migrants, it simply is not, wouldn't be politically advisable. I think that's why we don't see that a lot. And it's perfect. It's far easier if you are more right-leaning or anti-immigration as an elected rep to stand up and say that. I don't think it's as easy for others that are trying to say this is okay.
Well, I was also struck by, there was an interview with one of our European representatives who said that he had been arguing for several years about the need to have a really calm debate about and presentation of facts and discussion about the whole issue of migration, people coming in, how many, what are the evidence, and this had not been initiated by our public representatives. And I agree, Greg, you're quite right in the sense that it is, but I'm afraid I would see it as total cowardice on the part of our public representatives that this has not been done, because it leaves a vacuum where the first group, who are only interested in disruption, hate, for really fomenting fear, they have been given a goal, an access to the goal, and it is an own goal.
Katie,
and seriously threatening for not only the, I mean, seriously threatening our democracy, as well as it is kind of no favour.
Well, I mean, I don't think it's really fair to say that it's they that are threatening our democracy. The government are making decisions that many feel are undemocratic. Now, you could trace it back to people voting for people and saying, well, that's the democracy of it. But, you know, people are, a lot of this stuff is imposed on people. They've got no say in it whatsoever. And that's why the voices that you talk of resonate so much.
But they do need to basically lead on a debate. Why? What international obligations we have? Why the decisions have been made to actually have such large numbers? You know, a thousand is a large number.
I'll come back
area.
To you, Katie. What's your view?
Well, first of all, I think the thing that's really been lost in the days afterwards is how we've got to this situation that's happened in the first place. We have a 10-year-old child under the care of Tuzla who goes missing. Yeah? How did that happen?
Mm.
Right? We've lost all sense of that, right? How did that happen? Then we have that she's allegedly, because we have to say that word, been assaulted by someone who had a deportation order already on them. So again, where is the person that's to answer for that? And that's why I don't understand why the protests are happening at City West. I don't understand. People have the right to be angry over what has happened.
Because people feel in that area that they have been calling for extra Garda resources because they haven't felt safe. You've got a large group of individuals in there. The backgrounds aren't uniformly known. They don't know where they've come from, whether they've been responsible for any crime whatsoever. They feel uncomfortable if they see them loitering around the place. You know, people don't like this system of putting large groups of people they don't know in their area. So whilst you're right, Tuzla have serious questions to answer, the system has serious questions to answer, but also locals are very uncomfortable and it's reflected around the country.
But that's not done. Those are separate issues in the sense that that's not helping that 10-year-old. So I would have had no problems with protests at the Doyle. I would have had no problems with protests at Tuzla. Because that, right, what you've just said there, Greg, is that man's a scumbag, right? I don't want him here, right? Absolutely not. But you're holding everyone else in that City West
Hotel.
That's
because there is no system to actually identify someone who is an upstanding citizen or someone who could be responsible of the alleged assault of a child.
Right. Okay. But why they're holding everyone who's in City West responsible for the actions of that man? That would be like holding me responsible for the actions of Soldier F.
I'll come back to you, Breed. What's your take on this?
I want to just pick up on an excellent point made by Pat in relation to how we get the third of her three groups to stop recreational rioting. I remember during the last economic crash, listening to a very, very eloquent man who was providing a youth reach service in Tala at a cost of 40,000 per annum, where he was keeping the local boys and girls, the young people, occupied in the evenings when they'd nothing else to do. And I remember him saying at the time, and it stuck with me since, and I remembered it when Pat said it. He said, what are these kids going to do when they've nowhere to go in the evening? And where they're going is they're going out on their scooters with balaclavas and they're recreationally rioting because they've nothing else to do.
And I'm not, that is a very, very valid point. But I was watching much of the first two nights, the live streams, and there was a big mix. You look at who's been before the courts. These are people in the 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s as well.
People I'm who not are in doubting their 60s.
Exactly, and I'm not doubting that there are, you know, kids going about in scooters and bikes, and some actually even on horses. But if you look at the crowd, it's predominantly adult males. That's what I've seen,
yeah,
and those are the ones that were firing fireworks at the Garda Síochána. Those were the ones that were shouting and taunting and what have you. So,
yeah, but the guys who were in their 60s now were in their teens when the cuts hit and impacted the youth reach type services. And that's the issue.
Okay, so I take
just,
your point,
I just
and
to acknowledge it moved, that point that
and
Pat
it,
mo- had made.
It moved to an element of violence which it should never have. But there are those listening and very moderate people who weren't exactly caught up in themselves, that would say it was justified. It was a justified reaction, given the extent of the alleged crime and the anger in that local area and many local areas around the country. Those rioters, those protesters, would have got a fair level of support, I think, amongst what you might call moderate people around this country, because they're starting to...
They weren't protesters, yeah. Greg. Those people were not protesting. Those people were there rioting. They are not reasonable people. And the three groups that Pat has quite rightly pointed out, we need to hear the voice of the reasonable people who do have reasonable concerns. I have very, very serious concerns about the government approach to how we're dealing with balancing the rights of our citizens and balancing our international obligations with regards to housing migrants. Our deportation system is not working. It's blatantly not working. When someone who has been looking at a deportation order in March is available on the streets of Dublin in October. The issue here is that the government need to step up to the plate and provide a voice for those reasonable voices. The problem is when you have a vacuum, when there's no voice, when there's no consultation, when there's no sitting down and talking to residents, you're going to have that vacuum filled by bad actors who are predominantly pulling all the puppet strings via social media. The Gardaí will say that this was, and they acknowledge that the recent protests dash riots were organised predominantly via social media.
And not
so
all
you have
in
all
Ireland
these bad
either.
Actors at home pulling the strings of people who should know better, but unfortunately don't know better because nobody has ever engaged with them in relation to it. And that's where I blame the government in relation to this particular aspect.
Any of the three of you believe that we need to have a conversation about immigration in terms of, obviously, all of you have said we need a conversation, but in terms of numbers, locations, you know, integration?
Of course we need to have a conversation. It's a conversation that's long overdue. And that's the problem. That's the issue. And the lack of conversation and the lack of engagement has resulted in this vacuum. And that vacuum has been filled by people who are just there to cause havoc and mayhem.
See, Katie, I don't see if, say, for instance, everybody in every IPAS centre around the country was granted citizenship today. Do you see a pathway to a genuinely blended society where, you know, people that have lived here all their lives or lived here for 20 or 30 years will mix and socialise and share the same space with the people that are coming into the country? Or do you anticipate maybe we'll see pockets of people in certain areas, people maybe living here for years and not learning the language? Like, how do you see? Because this is the country that we are leaving to our children. How do you see society, mm-hmm. if all of these people are granted citizenship, how do you see that reflecting on society into the future?
Well, first of all, I don't think everyone will be granted citizenship. You have to go through a system. Obviously, it's been far easier for me to integrate because we're very culturally similar and I speak the language. I don't speak Irish, to my shame. I have tried and I do have a go. I think that I integrated with many, many people who are second generation, yeah? So, like, I have friends that are Bengali that have exactly the same accent as me. I have friends that are African who have Cockney accents. Do you know what I mean?
Are you talking about in England?
Yes, in England.
But would you say in England, would you not sort of see, is there not a case that there are sort of two groups of immigrants, those that came and still continue to come to England for a better life and to integrate, and then there is also other people coming from different areas that tend to congregate in specific areas and don't integrate?
I think that changes within a generation. But Greg, we did, you know, I have to say the Irish did that in the UK as well, you know, went to the Irish pubs. You know, there's a massive Irish centre in Kilburn. Do you know what I mean? Everyone went to the same areas from Ireland. Most people went to Kilburn, right? Okay. Or West London. Do you know what I mean? Or they were, the pocket of East London was Wapping. It was always known as the Irish area. Do you know what I mean? So it does change within a generation. I do believe that. I do believe, you know, you had the Windrush generation who came to England. Now, most of them had to integrate straight away because they were brought to do jobs that needed to be filled. Do you know what I mean?
And I suspect that it is they and the second generation who are your friends.
Yes.
Okay, that's my point. Pat O'Connor, what's your view?
It's a huge challenge. You know, and ironically, I think, like, you have the same challenge, of course, at a very, very different level in terms of integrating, for example, Cork people and Kerry people with Dubliners. You know, anybody moving anywhere basically is seen as an outsider. When I was a child, I was basically slagged off because I had a Cork accent. They called me Corky the Cat. I didn't fit in Dublin.
No,
the Dublin Jackies.
Yeah, okay, but there are fundamental commonalities there. Like, you know, I personally wonder what work is being done to educate people of the cultural norms in Ireland, you know, where women's role is in society, for an example, what's appropriate, what's inappropriate in terms of engagement. I'm not saying there's inappropriate stuff going on, but I mean, what is happening in that regard? Are you being, if I move to China, right, and it was bad manners to stare at someone for longer than 5 seconds, right, let's just say it was seen as disrespectful or it made people feel uncomfortable. Surely the logical thing would be that the Chinese government would set up some sort of a system for new people to say, by the way, culturally here, if you stare at someone for 5 minutes, it's seen as disrespectful. I'd go, well, okay, I've learned that information. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm trying to pussyfoot around examples here, right? But we are throwing loads of people in the one space. They are scared of each other, potentially. And especially to people who are coming to live with us, are they being assisted on what makes us, what, you know, what are the social norms? I've not heard this conversation had anywhere else, but I think it's a big problem.
I think you're absolutely spot on. And I think it's even more fundamental than that. I think we haven't had a discussion about what is acceptable behaviour in our society, in the public arena and in the private arena. I mean, the assumption has been that, you know, everybody will integrate and assimilate. And to an extraordinary degree, when you have small numbers of people, there seems to be, when people know each other, they get to know an individual, then in a way, all sorts of interesting things happen, right? And which are positive. But I completely agree that whether that happens or not, there needs to be, we don't have a discussion. I mean, in a way, like some France, the whole wearing of particular types of headgear in public arenas. Like we even haven't got around to a lot of the people who were protesting were wearing face masks. I thought that was meant to be not acceptable, illegal. But we just haven't had that discussion because I suppose we're not comfortable saying like this is the kind of society we have, we want. Interestingly, the only time we actually talk about our ideas is in the context of the, dare I say it, the election that the voting is happening today on. Mostly, we don't actually discuss, you know, the kind of society we are and what we expect of people who are citizens of our country. I think it's fine and dandy to say, you know, well, of course, we know you'll be, you know, a good citizen. But what that means in terms of your example of the Chinese and staring is spot on. But there are even more bigger fundamental ones, and particularly as regards women, the kind of attitudes that some of us have eventually seen some change in Ireland since the 1950s, going back there doesn't seem a good idea.
Okay.
And actually articulating that if you're a member of this society, you don't have to stay, but if you stay, these are the kind of behaviours and that are expected of you.
I think a respectful
discussion of that is well overdue.
Yeah, and I
even
really
some
think
of the cultural norms that I made mistakes on. Yeah, my mother-in-law asked me to drop her out at a wake. No problem, says I. Goes in there. I went to Francis. No one told me there'd be a body in there. Do you know what I mean? Like a wake with a body hasn't been seen. The last one of those I saw in the UK was in the 80s. I was a child. Do you know what I mean? So there are cultural norms here that were even a bit of a shock to me. You know, I was asked to go to a wake and everyone's saying the rosary and I'm thinking, I don't know what to do here. Yeah. Because it just doesn't happen. So there are loads of, and I think you're right, cultural classes would be a fantastic idea.
Yeah, but often those would be for, you know, people living here, not those coming here. Pat, Breed, sorry, do you have a last word on this before a break?
Yeah, we're all wondering what will work. I'll tell you what won't work. What won't work is continuing to house refugees and visitors to our country in centres such as that in Saggart. What will work is integrating them. Yesterday I met a very interesting man, originally from Azerbaijan, married to a Ukrainian lady, living and working in a small town in the west of Ireland. He's working in the local grocery shop, loves it. Everybody absolutely loves him in the town. She's working in the local pharmacy. His wife is working in the local pharmacy. The two of them have integrated absolutely perfectly into a small town where they're working and providing a valuable service in the two shops that they're working in.
You've hit on something quite important there, though. I mean, we do not have the accommodation to house people in the way that those two people find themselves living in. And then people say Ireland is full, in inverted commas, right? And some say it very nastily, and others say it as it relates to services, okay? The reason we are requiring hotels and grouped accommodation is because we simply don't have the accommodation to satisfy the needs of the current population. There's 15,000 people homeless. So that route to integration, it's ideal. But it's not going to happen.
This couple started in Ireland in hotel accommodation and then both secured jobs in a tiny little village in the west of Ireland. I mean, if there's 600 people living in this village, they then got friendly with somebody who offered them a house. They're renting the house. They're working. They're contributing. They're paying their taxes. They are absolutely loved by the local community out there. Absolutely loved. And that's integration.
Yeah.
And that's and with regards to then, you know, staring in China for too much longer, he was telling me a funny story about and I don't want to go into it because it might give the game away in relation to their identity. But he said to me that a neighbor came to him and said to him that that's not the way it's done. And he said it was done so nicely and so diplomatically, and he said, I won't make that mistake again.
Yeah.
That's how we do it.
Okay.
That's how it should be done. Instead of creating ghettos where we're lumping everybody in together and we're not quite sure what we're dealing with, and then that vacuum arises.
But then we surely then have to look at the inbound numbers then, Breed, because to achieve what you talk of, we cannot do it when you're having multiples of thousands coming in.
Yes, we do need to look at controls.
Okay. We're going to take a break, grab a coffee. We'll be back in 3 or 4 minutes after these messages and more from our guests. And I'll remind you who they are. You just heard the voice of Breed Curran. We have Professor Pat O'Connor and, of course, Katie Tyrrell McCafferty. A caller says the first step to integration is learning English, but currently in Donegal, those lucky enough to be on an English language course will only have one class a week. Others who have applied for courses haven't received a response, so it's very important that this is remedied. Perhaps Highland could have the Minister for Education on the show. Regards, we can inquire about that. What a silly idea, what a stupid idea, putting numerous people into small villages without the healthcare, schools, housing, etc. Also, giving these people benefits of free accommodation and travel. They can work so many hours a week and keep all the benefits. No wonder they love it. Born and bred in Donegal, born and bred Donegal woman. When the Irish went to the UK, they worked and paid taxes, rent, etc. I've worked in Ireland all my life and resent my tax being used to fund immigrants with free housing and spending money in Letterkenny. I see them every week, driving expensive UK reg cars, but live here, don't work. Just one example why they're allowed to do so. Well, people in IPAS centres get €38 per week. I'm not sure who you're referencing there. Okay, we're in the company of Katie Tyrrell McCafferty, Breed Curran, and Professor Pat O'Connor. Artificial intelligence tools can make totally convincing fake videos and pictures, deep fakes now, so easily that it's getting almost impossible to tell the difference between what's real and what's not. This means we can no longer trust our own eyes when looking at news evidence or even things our friends post online, since these fake videos and images will only get better and easier to make. Breed Curran, how are we, the everyday public, going to figure out what's actually true into the future? And how long is it, I suppose, before it encroaches into the world of law and evidence and all that type of stuff? I'm not trying to pigeonhole you into law with every question, but, you know, there is lots of crossover here.
Oh, Greg, there are some days when I stand up in the district court that I would love if I could deep fake myself and get somebody else to come in and do some work. Oh, look at, yeah. I'm always minded in relation to this. Do you remember the time during COVID, the judge in the States had a on his Zoom call in court, he was a cat.
Yes.
Or the lawyer was the cat, yes, and the judge was trying to explain to him that he had a filter on that made him look like a cat. Together, some days I feel like that. It is extremely difficult. I mean, I'm very aware that there's a moratorium in relation to the election today. But during the week, there was a deep fake video that was very convincing in relation to one of the candidates saying that she was withdrawing from the election. And you'd need to have a very keen eye to spot that there was a difficulty with that. The issue was that Meta weren't quick enough taking it down. It was flagged to them, but at that stage it had been seen by 40 or 50, 60,000 people, I think, at that stage. We just need to be very, very careful where we're getting our news from. We need to get our news from reputable sources. We need to recognise. There was an organisation set up by Mark Little called Storyful. They seemed to be, they were ahead of the pack with regards to verifying news and being able to provide confirmation to mainstream media as to whether images and videos appearing on social media were genuine or not. And that certainly needs, there certainly needs to be a conversation about that. You know, as somebody who sometimes regularly gets lost in the world of TikTok for candy floss for the brain, as I like to call it, we need to be very, very careful.
But just in terms of where
we're watching and the source of what we're watching.
Of course, and just in that context, though, that video is still widely available on Facebook that you talk of. Mm-hmm. And if you search it, the first place it comes up is with the Irish Daily Mail, who have posted the video. Okay, so arguably, some might say that
I said
would be,
reputable.
Well,
reputable.
Yeah, but people have. I do understand what you're saying, but I mean, obviously, in the text they describe what it is, but actually, the video plays without you not knowing what it is. Pat O'Connor, my concern is that now, you know, if I had, I don't have access to an Apple phone, but if I do, I could download the Sora 2 app, and I could take a picture of you and a sample of your voice, and I could. Almost, you couldn't determine the fact that it was not real, create an image of you saying anything and post it. And there's very little protection for you. You would be spend the next week or so trying to disprove that it was you. But in a year's time, someone might say, I saw that video of you, Pat, because that would still stick about, you know. And that's the reality of what we're going to see going forward. I'm already seeing it with politics, but because it's so easily accessible now, I could just do this on you, Pat, and claim that you said something with that beautiful background that you have in your voice, saying something incredibly controversial.
It's terrifying. I mean, it is really the theft of integrity. It is terrifying. And I have seen AI, how it has improved. Like a year and a half ago, I would have said, pretty bad, you know, but it is improving exponentially. And I mean, in a way, the whole regulation of these structures has been, I don't think really governments have either wanted to or been able to control them.
I think it's the latter, and I think it's also the former, because Elon Musk is one of the greatest innovators in this space, and he wields so much power, you do have governments that are actually afraid of him. And then secondly, of course, he's based wherever he's based, and no matter what the EU try and do, they can't really regulate that space.
But then, I mean, in a way, what you're really saying is there is no point in national governments, you know, that we may all just sacrifice ourselves on the blade of capitalistic whatever's, you know, and people find that quite hard to accept. I mean, I suppose I think what is worrying is that eventually people will only trust, you know, my mother said it or my friend said it, you know, it'll make the world, it's so narrow. I mean, it fundamentally throws out the idea of ideas, of universities. What's the point, you know, if we're not going to be able to say what is fact, what is truth? I don't think...
I've been worried for a long time too, especially for the generations being bought into this critical thinking. I'm really concerned will become a thing of the past, because it is so integrated that it does a lot of the thinking for people. If you watch on X now, people integrate with the Grok app as if it is a person that will give the right answers, that will correct something that is wrong. It's unbelievable how people, it's in a thread conversing with real people, and it's just become the norm.
I agree with you completely, Greg. My daughter's 21. She's just in her final year of her BA in Maynooth. And Maynooth's a wonderful university. The first year, there was a module on critical thinking that was compulsory for BA students, and it was absolutely fantastic. She said she gained so much from it, and I think critical thinking is absolutely critical. We need to integrate it at
the earliest
primary
age,
school and secondary school. It's too late, really, getting them in first year in university.
And I'll be
we
honest
need to
those,
integrate critical thinking.
And we can see also those on the extremes of politics, fully grown adults that have been around a long time for going critical thinking because it wouldn't suit their ideology. Well, Katie, I want to get a word from Katie. I don't want to replace you with AI, by the way, Pat, and I will. Go on, Katie.
No, I was just a bit like Bridge. I've got a history student, and one of the things I can remember again. Jesus, my O-level history is coming to the show today. In O-level history, we were taught about primary and secondary sources. And now, you know, of recent, you would have said, oh, you know, an interview on a news broadcast would have been a primary source. It was the person actually speaking, saying what they were saying. Now you just can't trust that, because all I would say is, that well-known phrase, do your own research. I mean, I did see come up on my feed, the AI video to do with today's election, and it did actually say RTE AI next to it on the post that I saw, but it was pretty, even the pauses, you know, like waiting for the, you know, sometimes if you're on a live broadcast and they have to wait for the studio and that to connect, okay. It was like, it was really well done.
All right. Listen, I have to go. I'm so sorry. I wish I had another hour. Katie Tyrrell McCafferty, thanks so much. Have a lovely weekend, will you?
Thanks,
Look after
Greg.
Yourself. Bye-bye. Professor Pat O'Connor, lovely to speak to you as always. Thank you so much for joining us.
That's you, Greg.
Look after yourself. And, of course, Breed, look after yourself as well. Breed Curran, solicitor. Have a great weekend.
Thank you very much,
bye
Greg.
Bye-bye.
You too.
Bye. And we'll be back with more of your comments and what have you after we take a break for the news and obituary notices.